Hello and welcome to Spotlight on Action, produced by the Healthcare Payment Learning and Action Network, commonly known as the LAN. I'm the host of today's session. I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the co-chair of the LAN CEO Forum and the director of the Duke Margolis Center for Health Policy. This Spotlight on Action podcast series features LAN stakeholders discussing real-world actions and opportunities to transform the healthcare system while aligning with the LAN goals and initiatives related to alternative payment models, or APMs. And those key goals are health equity, healthcare access, value-based healthcare, best outcomes for everyone at the lowest possible cost. This has been the LAN's mission for some time, but it's been both challenging and fraught with some new opportunities in the context of the pandemic, which all of us, all healthcare systems are still struggling through to address. Today, in that context, I have the pleasure of speaking with the co-chair of the LAN's Care Transformation Forum. That's where the LAN action happens. He's also the chief medical officer at Humana, Dr. Will Schrank. In his role as Humana's CEO, Will is at the forefront of transforming Humana's efforts to transform our healthcare system into one that's more agile, one that's more responsive to the needs of patients, and is focused on these LAN goals of better outcomes, fewer barriers to care, better patient experience, and more equity, including through addressing steps like the social barriers to access to needed care. So not a small task, but one that Humana, with Will's leadership, is very committed to being a leader on, and it fits in with the broad array of perspectives that we seek to bring together in the LAN. So we've got a lot to talk about today, given Humana's role and activities in both advancing value-based care and responding to the pandemic. And Will, really pleased to be with you today for this discussion.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, and it's always a treat to get a chance to talk to you.
Well, thank you. And I want to talk about several broad topics today, kind of bearing in on the work that you've done in leading Humana's transition to value-based payments that's intersected with your having a step up for the response to the pandemic, where we really needed some innovative models of healthcare to deal with COVID, to deal with the shift to home-based care, to deal with a new behavioral health, mental health stresses that have arisen, and to deal with all of those social barriers and challenges to getting to equity in healthcare that have come up and actually been exacerbated in the context of the pandemic. You know, the LAN's been working on this for a while now. Over a year ago now, the LAN launched the Healthcare Resiliency Framework in response to COVID-19 and in response to the LAN's efforts to make sure that APM reforms, other value-based care reforms, stayed as relevant and impactful as possible. And that framework includes both some short-term actions, some long-term steps to build resiliency in our healthcare system. As part of that, Humana stepped up and made a set of shared commitments as part of the overall LAN process, working together on these resiliency challenges, and some individual company commitments to move forward despite or to respond to the challenges of the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about some of the actions that Humana took in the short term during the public health emergency to help create that resilience?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, first of all, I'd say that we did a lot at Humana, but I've been so impressed, proud to see how the insurance industry in general and just the healthcare sector in general partnered so deeply and selflessly throughout the course of this pandemic to figure out how together we can meet the needs, the very, very personal needs of our members and patients. It was very, very clear to us at the outset of the pandemic, as we were reaching out to our members as we generally do, to ask them about their chronic conditions and their healthcare concerns. It's just really clear that folks were having new problems, different kinds of challenges, day-to-day challenges that really emerged from their social context. And it it forced us within, you know, in a relatively short amount of time to really transform the way we collect information and we provide outreach to our high-risk members, from focusing on their conditions and managing their conditions to really understanding the uncertainty of the pandemic and how we can help them. And over the course of the pandemic, we conducted over 6 million screenings around health-related social needs, provided over a million meals, addressed issues ranging from housing insecurity and transportation issues to really, you know, core issues like social isolation and loneliness. At the same time, we partner deeply with providers in new ways. And our value-based providers, we offered considerable amounts of advances in terms of their quality bonuses and their surplus bonuses in order to keep them whole for those that weren't capitated and weren't prepaid. And we reduced a whole host of administrative barriers to try to make sure that there were less concerns about capacity, whether it's access to subacute nursing facilities or the like. We spent a lot of time figuring out how to get more care to the home. Whether it's providing screenings in the home, whether it's providing care in the home, that was a large priority. And we worked closely with CMS, who gave us a great deal of latitude through waivers. We eliminated all barriers to telehealth. So we provided telehealth services, or we offered telehealth services with no cost sharing to make sure that that patients, our members, could get access to the care they need from the comfort of their own homes, the safety of their own homes. And in addition to things like not charging any copays for testing or for treatment of COVID. And then we really, really engaged around the time of the vaccine, and we continue to try to understand the very personal barriers that individuals face, and to try to make sure that we're providing both education, transportation, engagement, information to encourage our members, and particularly those that are in socially vulnerable areas, to get vaccinated. It's been a very fulsome kind of year and a half where we've tried everything. We know that with a great deal of humility, we haven't done it all right. We've learned from our colleagues. We hope we've shared with our colleagues across the industry and across the sector. And we continue to be, you know, eager participants as we try to manage this.
Yeah, and still opportunities to keep learning. I was struck by, probably won't be surprised to the audience that we've talked about some of these topics before. And, you know, struck by in some of those discussions and seeing some of the activities around Humana and many of the diverse medical practices that you work with around the country, you found that some of the organizations, the healthcare organizations that were already going down this road of value-based care, moving away from fee-for-service, had a somewhat easier time in some ways of making these adaptations on the fly in this public health emergency. If I've got that right, could you expand on that a little bit or explain a bit more?
Yeah, that is right, and it was actually in a lot of ways really reassuring to see that our providers, in particular those that are prepaid, who are responsible for the total cost of care of our members, were unbelievably flexible and nimble, in part because they were less concerned about sort of their day-to-day revenue. Their revenue was assured. So there was less sort of concern, you know, about their resilience, if you will. However, in producing and the clinical transformation that's necessary to be successful in total cost of care models, those providers were just much better positioned to deliver the care that our members, their patients need. So whether it was providing more continuous and frequent outreach to manage chronic conditions, whether it was flipping almost with incredible speed to the use of telehealth. And it was, in addition, it was really focusing on those social and sort of personal challenges that their patients were experiencing. Those providers did, they were in a much better position to help. It's interesting that you would expect at a time where fee-for-service providers would be trying to sort of supplement their revenue. We offer telehealth at full charge. We would have expected that fee-for-service doctors would be much more rapidly adopting telehealth in order to substitute for the in-person visits. But that's not at all what we found. We found that value-based providers were much faster at adopting telehealth over the course of the pandemic, and it was sustained considerably longer than in fee-for-service arrangements. And it just speaks to the fact that it's an orientation, it's a focus on the whole patient, and it's a clinical transformation model that allowed those providers to deliver a different level of care.
So they'd already established some of the new connections, the different kinds of staffing and capabilities needed, started to build out those muscles already. And it's interesting, we did a report on a range of healthcare organizations last year during the pandemic at Duke Margolis on healthcare and COVID healthcare reform and COVID-19 resiliency. And found something similar that, it's one thing to have a telehealth visit with a patient. It's another thing to make an effective home-based care model work, which definitely requires the connectivity, but also can be augmented by things like remote monitoring capabilities, nurses or other members of a healthcare team who can help follow up with a patient, making sure their needs are being met at home, reliance on community health workers, since as it sounds like you found during the pandemic, a lot of the problems that people were facing that were leading to serious medical consequences, everything from infections to emergency room visits, serious depression, et cetera, were related to things going on beyond healthcare. You mentioned transportation and isolation, for example. It sounds like that was your experience too.
Absolutely. This was this is one of these unique perturbations that forces us to take a step back and really understand the drivers of health and the true, very personal barriers that patients, that members, beneficiaries face. And I think we've learned a lot over the course of this year and a half about what it takes to keep people healthy. And it's in these moments of uncertainty that we really accelerate our learning. I think we've these are the integration of the deeper integration of social care, the deep integration of behavioral health care, the need to better leverage care in the home and virtual care as a sort of an integrated part of care delivery. And to do that all in a model where the provider takes meaningful responsibility and ownership for the health of the population of patients they serve, that is the model that has clearly been most effective at managing throughout the course of the pandemic. And that's the one that I think we're seeing CMS sort of lean in on, and I think we as an industry are all going to lean in on.
Yeah, certainly seeing that leaning in. I guess a challenge though is that most of the healthcare system heading into the pandemic, and I'd say even today, was not being paid on that basis. They're very much dependent on the fee-for-service revenues. And boy, like you said at the beginning, those physicians, nurses, hospitals, skilled nursing, long-term care facilities have really had to step up. And, I guess the challenge, Will, that as you think about moving from the short-term response and what worked in terms of flexibility and what especially worked in terms of the organizations that were already going down the value-based care road in a serious way. The challenge is how do you build on that? I mean, it's so many physicians, healthcare organizations that are just feeling burned out, overwhelmed with this latest surge in many parts of the country. And it felt like, well, we can't build out these new capabilities. We're having trouble just getting by. We appreciate the payment flexibility, but you get a sense that we can build on these steps in the short term to learn from them and make them take more widely and accelerate progress for the longer term? Or has this just been a year of disruption and hopefully we can get back to reform later?
Well, I know I share your perspective here that this is not a blip, then we're going to go right back to where we were. I think that there is no way that we'll ever look at care in the home and virtual care the same. That is now part of the conversation, and it's an expectation that that's a consistent offering, and we've got a lot more patients, in particular seniors. We've gotten comfortable with using technology and creating new kinds of relationships in terms of delivering care. The other thing that you spoke to as you in the introductory remarks about equity, that the pandemic has really shined a very bright light on not just these important drivers of health, but really the how different populations within the U.S. experience care and experience health outcomes in very different ways. And that we will not walk back in terms of recognizing equity as a primary goal of the healthcare system. And as long as we do, and we start to really continue to, as we foster and continue the right measurement and the right incentives around promoting equity, that's going to be another really important motivator for providers to take a much more holistic view about how to manage the health of the patients that they serve. And as this is just another, I mean, I feel like there's been sort of building momentum, building inevitability, but this seems to be another big piece that's going to really help, create more of a center of gravity for that momentum.
Yeah, let's unpack that a little bit, if that's okay. I mean, 2020 does seem like it was an inflection point with respect to addressing equity in healthcare and so many other aspects of American society. On the one hand, an inflection point in the wrong direction, including some really terrible events outside of healthcare, and within healthcare, a hugely disproportionate impact by race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status across different groups in our nation, with what had been some real progress and improvements in life expectancy and reductions in health disparities over the last couple of decades, kind of wiped away by some estimates for Black Americans and Hispanic Americans, loss of 2 or 3 years of life expectancy. It's hit all Americans hard, but particularly racial and ethnic minority groups and lower income groups. And you all, the flip side of that inflection point, it seems like an inflection point of awareness. And as I mentioned at the outset, and as you're involved with it, the LAN is taking, just like the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and really all of HHS and many of our colleagues in state governments, in employer settings, running employer plans, health plans around the country, are putting equity much more front and center, being more intentional, as you said, about measuring these disparities, engaging communities and diverse populations in finding and working together, co-developing solutions to try to reduce them and implementing those. And you had sort of a trial by fire in the pandemic. And could you maybe expand a little bit? You talked about some of the steps, Will, but I know there have been some really innovative programs at Humana, including taking a fresh look at ways of working with the federal government and state governments on public health initiatives like vaccination, which I hope, to your earlier point, are going to stick with us as well. Could you talk a little bit more about some of the Humana experiences in that area?
Yeah, I'd say Humana, but really the industry in general has we got together as an industry, the insurance industry, to understand how we could partner better to address, to improve vaccination rates, but essentially to prophylax against the likelihood, which ended up happening, that there would be considerable disparities in uptake of the vaccine. over the course of the pandemic, we had seen the disparate impacts on people of color. We wanted to be really thoughtful about understanding sort of who's most socially vulnerable, providing additional resources up front, try to reduce the likelihood that you have pockets of the population that were under-vaccinated and for whom there was, you know, much greater risk than other pockets where they were more vaccinated. So what we did is as an industry, we worked together to identify the 25% of communities with the highest social vulnerability index. It's an index generated by the CDC that characterizes, it uses data about income and wealth in addition to ethnicity and race, transportation, other kinds of sort of census level data to characterize vulnerability related to social condition. And in those quarter of communities, we provided a considerable amount of proactive outreach. We called members, we encouraged them to use the to be vaccinated. We offered essentially almost uniformly across the health plans, offered transportation and other resources to try to facilitate. Many of us created partnerships with providers. We created partnerships with Walmart and Walgreens to where they gave us the ability to actually schedule appointments in their, well, Walmart in particular, gave us the ability to schedule appointments into their clinics so that we could really end to end. We got a member on the phone that wanted to get vaccinated. We could schedule the appointment and provide the transportation and make sure that they did in fact get that vaccination. And we focused those efforts in the most vulnerable neighborhoods. We started in vulnerable neighborhoods in Alabama and had a really incredible positive feedback. And then spread that out to many, many states where we had relationships with retail pharmacies to try to foster the completion of those vaccinations. We worked with a variety of states. As you know, Mark, we wish we could do more, but worked with states to try to understand what problems they're solving and to figure out how to target and deliver. Often we brought in mobile units to actually deliver vaccinations. We set up vaccination clinics in partnership with local providers to try to really focus the delivery and the supply on where the need was greatest. And it was generally in places with lots of more social vulnerability. You know, we're still in the midst of this pandemic, and there's still a lot of people who haven't been vaccinated. So clearly, we're having this conversation with a lot of humility. It's not like we've got this solved, but we have really put together a pretty concerted effort to figure out how we can be part of the solution.
I want to recap a couple of the important points that you described there. One is the steps that health plans, including particularly Humana, where you've got the most direct experience, are taking to take on some of these public health and equity issues in a more direct way. And just to add to that, as you know, we've done a lot of work, including collaboration with the health plans and the states at the Duke-Margolis Center, including some publications, again, available on our website about how states and health plans can work together, as you said, to identify these pockets of inequality in access, these areas that have been hardly reached in terms of supports to get to better health and prevent complications, and even some steps as you look forward to what I think 21st century public health can really look like, partnerships between state immunization programs, sharing public health data in confidential and secure and appropriate ways with health plans and their healthcare providers that are really trying to take on this focus on accountability for better outcomes and lower costs. And that leads me to the second point. So there are a lot of things that you're doing, but back to our discussion about the role of payment reform and value-based care care here for your providers that are shifting away from fee for service. That gives them more opportunity as well to reach out to those particular patients in need to find whatever it to help do whatever it takes to get those patients health risks addressed. Is that are those programs synergistic as you've
Absolutely. I mean, you've often said, I think you've probably been the leading voice in saying that in the setting of this uncertainty, public and private partnerships are absolutely essential to bringing the right level of resources and the optimal expertise to bear at a really, really challenging time. So I do think that those partnerships, partnerships with states, partnerships with the federal government, create sort of the foundation on which we have better data, better resources, better community outreach that really do support that the sort of laboratory to foster and improve on value-based care. That we have the right data, we have the right information, we have the right sort of community supports to help providers meet the very personal needs that patients face. And in that setting, they can really think about their ownership and their accountability for the outcomes of the patient, not just for delivering care.
Yeah, and we're certainly not all the way there yet, but that kind of intentionality and alignment around population health goals, including health equity goals, including goals of getting vaccination rates up, especially in hardly reached populations, other steps to improve population health and avoid unnecessary costs. Is that kind of alignment between payers, providers, public health organizations that I think the pandemic has really highlighted in terms of where we need to go to both get out of the situation we're in now and prevent something like this from ever happening again. Will, we are about out of time. It's been
Can I just pile on one thing?
I was going to ask for like some final thoughts on before we leave, since you're so involved with the LAN efforts about moving forward from here. How do we build on this very special, very challenging, but very special moment we're in right now?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to pile on one thing you just said, and then I'll answer that question. You were hinting at multi-payer, how the partnerships between private and public entities can support multi-payer activity. And that's such a critical piece of this, is that as we do deepen public-private partnerships and we create greater alignment as payers and as federal agencies and state agencies around aligning around these approaches to foster value-based care, it's a lot easier for providers to be successful in that environment. It's very hard in a fragmented environment where there's a whole host of different payment models that they're dealing with. And it's through these deeper partnerships that we can actually really accelerate and make it easier for providers and move faster. And I would say, in answer to your last question, a wise friend once said to me that you should never let a good crisis go to waste. And this has been an incredibly trying and exhausting and uncertain and really difficult time for so many of us. But we've learned a lot. And we've made a lot of progress in areas that we never could have imagined. We never could have imagined getting the 90% telehealth visits in a matter of months. Would have been unimaginable. We never would have imagined our ability to rapidly put together models to deliver better care at home and offer services at home. We also have a much more humble and honest and open appreciation for our failings in terms of what we need to do to be able to deliver more equitable care for all the people we take care of. This is absolutely the time for us to put our heads down and work even harder. It's exactly the time for us to build on sort of these unanticipated gains and make sure that not only do we not lose them, but we take this momentum as an opportunity to get better. And I'm really, really optimistic, frankly. I think that we as an industry have all sort of started to wrap our heads around the idea that we can do better and we can partner better and we can align better. And I'm really excited. I think value-based care is going to be sort of the core theme to bring that through.
Yeah, well, what an experience this last year and a half with the pandemic has been. But as you said, it has created some opportunity and some real momentum for multi-payer progress. And I'm looking forward to continuing to work with you on the LANS efforts for all of those who are joining with us in this podcast. The current LAN activities are making available more experiences and lessons like the ones we've talked about today from the pandemic in resilience and how to accelerate that and support it through payment reform, both today and looking ahead. Looking farther ahead for the LAN, there's a collaborative effort ongoing now around action on health equity and on, as Will said, multi-payer approaches to supporting these kinds of reforms, making it easier and more aligned for healthcare providers, for employers, for other key stakeholders in the community, and especially for patients. So please visit the LAN website to keep up to date on these activities. And Will, thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks for all your time and effort on helping to guide the LAN towards more relevant than ever goals in today's challenging times. And for all of those of you who are with us, if you enjoyed this conversation, if you want to find out more, again, please go to the LAN website, look for some of our other Spotlight on Action series episodes highlighting work to advance value-based care, and stay tuned for further progress and further opportunities to collaborate.